Fastball it is. Leased to right center field. Back goes Ichiro. It's over his head. It goes all the way to the wall. McCoy scores. Escobar scores on a double by Davis. And the Blue Jays lead Seattle 7-5.
There's your play of the game brought to you by Speed Boost from Rogers. Hello, Speed Boost. Goodbye waiting. Another first only from Rogers. That is Rajay Davis, who had come into the game as a pinch runner in the seventh inning when the score was 4-1 for the Blue Jays, breaking a 5-5 tie with two out in the bottom of the eighth with a double over the head of Ichiro Suzuki. Looked to me like Rajay thought he'd walked it off. Now, there's a good chance that he thought it was going to bounce over the fence and be a ground rule double, but the way he stopped coming around first and then took a look and took off again, he had driven in the winning runs, as it turned out, because John Roush came in and pitched a strong ninth inning, allowing the 1-2 out hit after he bailed Casey Jansen out in the top of the eighth by popping up Franklin Gutierrez and striking out Sean Figgins. And for those who asked on the Twitter, you cannot get the save in a game in which you get a win. The save has to be given to the guy who finishes the game and doesn't get the win. So Roush gets a win. Casey Jansen gets the blown save. 16 blown saves for the Blue Jays so far this season, but they've only lost 9 of those games. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Jays Talk. The phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We're just finding out now, thanks to our fine intern, Carolyn, that the Mariners are holding a closed-door, locked team meeting right now. They've lost 12 in a row. The press is not allowed in. The PR guys are not allowed in. Not a happy bunch of Seattle Mariners who score 16 runs in this three-game sweep after scoring 11 in the first 9 games of the losing streak. As I mentioned before the break, Will Carroll joins us now of SportsIllustrated.com, and maybe not one of the originals in baseball prospectus, as I'd said, but one of the members of the peak time. No question, of baseball prospectus. You're the injury expert, and you can follow Will at Injury Expert on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to Toronto.
Hey, thanks a lot. I really enjoyed being out here and seeing what they've done with Rogers Center. It's been a couple of years. I mean, last time I was here, it was still Sky Dome. So it's been a while. And beautiful stadium and a good win. Certainly a good series for the Jays. They're looking like a team that's, you know, gotten off the bottom. The plan's coming together. You can start to see, if you squint, you can see a winning team here.
Well, they are a winning team, 50-49, so there you go.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't think anybody really had the expectation that this team was going to be anything contention-wise. Yeah. You want to see a building year. You want to see some success. It's a lot like with the minor league club. You really don't care if they win.
Right.
But it's better when they do.
We got to get that through to the people out there. And I understand people are frustrated, and frustrated today by that grand slam that Casey Jansen gave up. That's tough.
It was a good pitch, though.
And this is a guy who's been one of the best relievers in the league all year. And here's someone who's just coming off, and there's your forte, coming off the disabled list with forearm soreness, which surprised the heck out of me that he was only out the 15 days.
Yeah, and that's one of the worries. You know, the Jays have had such rotten luck with injuries, and it's been so weird. There was it last year or 2 years ago, where they had virtually every pitcher was on the DL, and they had one position player that was on the DL all year long. And if they can just figure that out, that's like trading for two pitchers.
Yeah, when J.P. Ricciardi was here, towards the middle of the J.P. Ricciardi era, the Blue Jays were writing the book on catastrophic arm injuries.
Yeah, it was amazing how many guys, and you see how many really great arms they had at that point. Dustin McGowan's the one that always comes to mind, since he's still out there trying to come back from his 8,000th arm surgery. And, these kids just, we don't know how to keep them healthy. You see, some great names, and you'll always hear people bring up, well, what about Bob Gibson? Well, there's not many Bob Gibsons.
Right.
And if you have Bob Gibson, as Seattle kind of does in their top two guys, we remember the exceptions, not the rules. And, it's tough. Hopefully they can turn that around. And with John Farrell, a pitcher himself, we're starting to see maybe a new era with managers, where it used to be almost no pitchers were successful.
Right.
Tommy Lasorda was such of an exception. And now with Farrell and Bud Black, who...
Alan Ashby, a year in the minors.
Yeah.
Very successful manager.
Exactly.
As a catcher.
more catchers. It's always the backup catchers, I guess, because they're on the bench with the manager the whole time.
Well, they're the only ones who get to see the game played out in front of them as well. But yeah, the backups help as well. He's Will Carroll. I'm Mike Wilner. We will get to your phone calls in a second. But since we have the injury expert here, Jose Bautista.
Yeah.
Thursday night, I honestly thought in that slide to third base, the ankle exploded,
yeah,
a couple of torn ligaments, see you next year, and here he is on the field.
Yeah, it was lucky, you know, his ankle gave way. Anytime you have too much force, like he had, and the foot kind of landed wrong, for lack of a better term, something's going to give. You saw that in the worst case with Buster Posey, mm-hmm, that play at the plate. But luckily, he is a strong guy. We've seen that over and over again, even when I remember him, gosh, 5-6 years ago when he was the backup third baseman at Indianapolis, and we were like, oh, he could turn into a decent infielder, maybe a backup kind of guy. Certainly didn't expect this. But little luck, that's what you've got to have. You know, I thought it was maybe the beginning of the end of the Cinderella story, that, you know, he ends up tearing something and missing basically the second half of the season. But good to see him out here. I was worried I was going to miss him on this trip, but exciting to see him.
And here he was with a double today, and he got to second. I mean, he's not running like he used to run, but it didn't look too compromised.
No. That was one of the things I was looking for, especially on that double. Didn't appear to be having any problems. Didn't appear to have a ton of problems at the plate. Now, you wonder whether, you know, if he's fully healthy, does that double go the extra 20 feet and end up a souvenir? So I think it's still there, and I think, you know, fantasy players are saying, when's he going to start running again? But look, let's face it, this guy right now is Barry Bonds, and steals are a bonus.
Right, exactly. You know what I did notice, and what I was looking for his first game back, and this is something that you would probably appreciate more than a lot of other people, I was looking to see how he decelerated.
Yep.
And he found himself on first base, and Adam Lind hit into a double play. And not only did he not slide into second, but he was out and peeling off well before the dirt cutout, but he wound up in short left field on his turnaround. And that, to me, said he's got a long way to go, but now it's only 2 days later.
Yeah.
And he seems all right.
You do. You see that a lot. You see, first, it's that first step. Whether you see a guy thinking about it and trying to push off with the other foot, you see that a lot, and that, you know, just the thought process alone slows you down. And the biggest one is deceleration, like you said. You know, a lot of times with outfielders, guys who have knee problems, they don't want to do that, you know, because you kind of have to stutter step. And I always thought that, you know, playing center fielder would be hard on those guys, and they're like, no, I don't want to play the corners because there's walls, and you really have to decelerate then.
This is very, very true.
Otherwise, it's sudden, and that's bad.
We've got Will Carroll here, and while you are the injury expert, you are, without question, a baseball guy, and we can talk about all sorts of things with you. So, let's talk about this sweep. I know you were only here today, got in late last night, but here you have a Mariners team, 11 runs in 9 games.
Yeah.
They score 5 in the first 2 on Tuesday and then get shut out for 12 innings as the Jays come back and win. Yesterday, they're down 10-2 in the 4th, and they had the bases loaded and nobody out in the 1st and couldn't cash. Today, they get this Olivo slam after being able to do nothing against Romero. I've said many times on this station, on this show, and talking people off the ledge, you're never as bad as you look when you're going bad.
Right.
But, man, do they look bad.
They do. I mean, just from the lineup, that's not a winning lineup.
Right.
They've got, you know, a couple good major league players and a whole bunch of backups in situations, and I really don't understand it. Obviously, there's things going on in that clubhouse. They're having the closed-door meeting. You're on a 12-game losing streak. You don't want to get that culture going, and the reason Eric Wedge is there is to try to change the culture a little bit. He's a no-nonsense guy. And what you worry about is that team has a lot of younger guys as well as those older veterans. You've got the kids like Ackley, who we saw as a pinch hitter. And when I saw the lineup today, I'm like, Jack Wilson. Okay, it's getaway day. Maybe they're trying to save him.
Eric Wedge said today before the game, I'm putting the veterans in, want to see if they can do something because they haven't done anything for us all year.
Exactly. And that's where you start to see switches. And now, I guess they did. I mean, this is obviously they were right in it to the end. It's just, you know, there at the end, one of their good pitchers gave up the 2 runs at the end. And that's going to happen. That's baseball. But it's that it keeps happening. They couldn't take that home run, that grand slam, and build on it. You know, you've got to have a couple breaks to win games. And when you're in this kind of slump, it starts to build on itself.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Let's get to the phones. Will Carroll is here from SportsIllustrated.com, the injury expert, and we're going to talk about this Jays sweep where people were throwing themselves the level of after that Grand Slam on the live blog on the Twitter was nuts. They did win the game, and they've won 8 out of 10. So let's remember that. The Blue Jays are up over 500 for the first time since June 18th. Let's start with Russ in New Jersey. Russ, you're on the Jays Talk.
Good afternoon, Mikey. I was one of those ready to off the ledge because 3 games in a row we've given up the pitiful offensive team 5 runs, or yesterday 6. But you got to be very excited.
Yesterday didn't count, though. Yesterday doesn't count. It was 11-3 in the 8th inning. It doesn't matter how many they score from that point on.
I know, but you just want to see some of the guys who aren't pitching well. Like Francisco pitched well. But the thing that I want to say is, and I don't know if you've spoken about this because I haven't listened lately, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But since Thames and Snyder have come into the lineup, okay, 17 games since July 1st, we have scored 6 runs or more in 10 of those games. And we haven't played bad teams. We played the Phillies. We played Boston. We played the Yankees. So this offense is, you know, is a real exciting offense. And with the players and the young players and the guys that we have in the minors, this could be a real good upper echelon offense in the major leagues for years to come. You got to, if you're a Blue Jay fan, you really got to be excited of what you see out there.
I think you do. The top 6 right now looks awfully good to me. The way Thames is swinging the bat, 2-for-4 today, and Travis Snyder, though he's kind of alternated good game bad game lately, I'm a huge fan of Travis Snyder. And Will, this is a guy who's been the super-duper prospect for years and years now. What'd you think of seeing him out there in center field?
I liked it. I mean, you look at him and you say, center. I mean, he just doesn't look like a center fielder. But he covers the ground. He obviously has speedy guys on either side of him. You can sub in Davis, who's very good out there. I like the idea of getting your best bats in there, especially on a game like this where Fister is a guy who you can get to. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you let him get in that groove, as he looked like he was for the first 5 innings, it's tough. But this offense is solid. And, you know, they're going to add another piece here any day now.
Any week now, probably, with Lurie.
You know, I'd heard rumors that he was going to meet the team in Texas. I don't know if that's true.
I would not be surprised by that. I mean,
it's a shorter flight, at least.
Yeah, it is. And he had a big game yesterday. But the 0-for-7 in the doubleheader, I think they really want him set.
Yeah.
And you know as well as anybody, while we're on the Lurie topic, busted hand. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, you know, coming back, when he was playing, he wasn't in Vegas.
I forget. Dunedin.
Yeah, they had him in Dunedin. He's wearing some kind of brace.
It's a solid steel plate on the front of his batting glove.
Very good. Why don't all players wear that? I mean, we see all this. Jeff Bagwell used to wear like a big piece of foam on there after he breaks his hand 2 years in a row. I don't know why players don't wear more protective gear. You see how many players have hurt their hands, their thumbs, certainly it wouldn't have helped something like Albert Pujols.
Right.
But just the idea that we have this protective equipment and these guys don't wear it, I mean, I can remember these new helmets that they hate wearing.
Yeah, because they look bad. Great. Who cares? Going to save your
head. Yeah, until it hits you in the head. There was the minor league players have to wear them. Right. And there was a kid down in Indianapolis just got crushed in the head. 92-mile-an-hour fastball. It was like one of the worst ones I saw. He went down. He stayed down for a minute. But he said, I just knew the trainer was coming out. I didn't want to move in case something was worse than I felt.
That's amazing.
But he pops back up, runs to first base. And has had no problems whatsoever. And afterwards, I was like, so the helmet saved you? He goes, yeah, it's a great helmet. And I go, would you wear it in the majors? No.
No, it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
No, and I can't wait to get up to the majors and start chewing tobacco.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but back to Lowry. I hope he does that. He got hit on the hand, I think, in the first game back.
Yep.
And it basically clanged off. And he's not psychologically worried about that. So I think that's good. And the kid can hit. It's never been a question about where he can hit. It's where he could play. And if he could keep his head straight and be a major leaguer. He's just so talented. I mean, we see this over and over. Guys like him, guys like Bryce Harper. I mean, if you're 18, 19, 20 years old and you're a millionaire and you've got all this free time and everybody's been telling you how great you are for all your life, I know what a jerk I would end up being.
Oh, yeah, yeah, me too.
Pretty bad now.
Have, yeah.
And if you gave me all that, I don't know why we I mean, these are kids.
Well, he's a good Canadian boy.
He is.
Supposed to be nice.
He's supposed to be, and then you stick him in Vegas. What do you expect?
Done, you know what? He's done some great things personality-wise working on that since coming to the Blue Jays organization, and I think the Jays are really, really happy so far with how he's turned out. 21 years old.
Yeah.
You know? He's going to be in the big leagues, and it is kind of nuts.
It is. I know the Brewers hated giving him up. But, you know, it's one of those trades that helped both teams, and I think it's going to really work out for the Jays.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. We are going to... Oh, tell me we're not having the same phone issues that we had yesterday. All right, John in Toronto. Hey, John, you're on the Jays Talk.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Sorry, I'm all confused at the time.
Say hello to Will Carroll.
I want to... Hi, Will.
Hey, guys.
Actually, as long as we've got you on the line, I wanted to talk about Aaron Sebia. First of all, does he still have a problem with his thumb? I know he was injured a few weeks ago. And secondly, to Mike, I know they won't admit it, but I'm sure the Blue Jay organization is not particularly impressed so far with Aaron Sebia's defense or offense. Are they at all thinking about bringing up their double-A catcher they got from Philadelphia September? Not now.
No.
September to give him a try.
No. And I don't think the Blue Jays are not happy with J.P. Arencibia. And I've said this many times. It takes a long time for a catcher to become a good offensive player in the major leagues.
Yeah, I mean, and let's kind of tie these two together. You asked about his thumb. He's still feeling it, I'm sure. But he's playing through it. And that's the hardest part for a catcher. It's not just that they have to learn how to hit these guys at this level. It's not that they have to make the same adjustments as everybody else. They've also got to be handling the pitchers. They've got to be handling the defense. They're in more meetings than anybody else. And on top of that, these guys are getting beat up. So when you're talking about guys who, you know, literally their hands are swelling through the course of the season, where they have to change from a large to an extra large batting glove, where, you know, you see some of these catchers' hands... you know, just gnarled sometimes.
Too bad Ashby's not in here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's scary. I mean, it's not NFL level scary, but it's you just see the abuse these guys take, and you wonder how they hit it all.
Yeah.
And over, you see guys fading towards the end of the season because it's the workload, it's the kneeling, it's the wear and tear on the hand. So I think you kind of have to tie those two together and take it with a grain of salt. It takes guys a long time as catchers develop. I like Aaron Sebia.
There are very few Buster Posey's out there who can just hit the ground running in the big leagues.
He's not a catcher. I mean, the thing that people have to remember is he wasn't a catcher until his junior year at Florida State. And the reason he's hurt now is he doesn't really know how to play the position. I mean, he can go through the motions. He's enough of an athlete that he can do it. Some of the plays he makes back there, you know, he'll reach out and get things that he just can instinctually do. But he was out of position. Johnny Bench was talking about this, how if he had been positioned right, he would have gotten bowled, it would have hurt, but he wouldn't have broken his ankle the way he did. And you see that over and over, that there are things he has to learn. And I hope that they take this opportunity to say, you know what, you're a really good hitter, you don't have to be our catcher, or at least move him out of there like they did last year.
Yeah, possibly. And back to JP for a second, as I sit here and I look at my days as a catcher, that below my index finger is still permanently swollen from catching. But JP, in a position where his left thumb, his catching thumb, is the one that gets hurt, there is no chance for that to heal because it's getting dinged again every day.
Exactly. There's just no way to do it. You're taking, 90-mile-an-hour fastball, 95-mile-an-hour fastball. If you happen to not web one, then you're feeling it through the next couple innings, or and then it goes numb.
Right.
So,
you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, you know, you get him an off day here and there. You've got a good backup, but I would certainly think that he's the least of the problems. I mean, it's nice. I'm blanking on the kid's name down in Double A.
Travis Darno.
Yeah, whose brother is doing very, very well. Mm-hmm. Had him in Indianapolis, and now he's turning into a credible major league shortstop. I'll get to see him later this week. Down in for the first place Pittsburgh Pirates.
Half a game back.
Oh, they're half a game
half
back
game
now.
Half a game back now.
Second place Pittsburgh Pirates is still almost weird to say.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, Chase Darno doing a heck of a job there as well. We have Will Carroll, who is the injury expert. We have Greg in Las Vegas. Hey, Greg.
Hey, you know, I'm one of these people who thought, and I wasn't the only one, that Brett Lowry should have been with the team out of spring training, not only because he
John
was
John Farrell
pretty,
thought that too.
I think Alan Ashby felt that way.
No, I'm serious. John Farrell did think that.
Well, so did Buck Martinez, frankly. But, you know, he was better than a lot of major leaguers at that time. And that's not to say there wasn't room for improvement, particularly moving over to third base with the footwork and all. But the thing is, what really saddened me about it was that I thought the Blue Jays, they may not have been the obvious choice in that tough American League West, I mean East, but, you know, they had some pretty decent pitching and some really big bats in that lineup. And I thought that they could have been competitive, and I think that Brett Lowry would have been the cherry on the top. But the worst part about it was not only exposing him to the Las Vegas culture, but the worst part of it was that you expose himself to the Pacific Coast pitching. There's a lot of kids out here who can throw real hard, and they don't know where that ball is going. And I think it's so ironic that just as Brett Lowry is about to be called up, he gets that broken hand. And I've seen professional players be impacted by an injury like that for not only, you know, much of a season, but sometimes months and years.
Oh, yeah,
So what do you think, Brett? I mean, Brett Carroll, what do you think about the possibility of Brett Lowry coming up and being the player he seemed to be cracked up to be in the spring? And I also noticed that between the two of you, you had sort of a disagreement, 180-degree polarity, I would say, between the idea about the idea of just exactly when we're going to see Brett Lowry.
Yeah, first of all, it's Brett Lowry, and it's Will Carroll, not Brett Carroll, but Brett Lowry is a better player than Brett Carroll, though
yeah.
Brett Carroll might be a better player than Will Carroll. We're not sure about that. I got two things to add on to that. First of all, speak to this idea that Lowry wouldn't have gotten hurt if he'd been in the major league. Some people are saying the Blue Jays are at fault for not having him here sooner.
No.
And the second thing is the idea, too, that he would have been able to be here and dominate the way he did in the Pacific Coast League as a 21-year-old rookie.
Well, there are a couple things here. I mean, this is a dumb luck injury.
Right.
I mean, there is no way you can prevent, absent wearing protective gear.
Which they could do.
You know, he could have worn that, the thing he's wearing now, before. No, I mean, the point the caller had there about the pitchers being wild, it's true. You do see that more at the lower level. So is there a slightly increased risk? Yes. But the fact is, Lowry wasn't ready. No one, and I mean no one, and this goes back to the Brewers in 2010, no one questioned his talent. He is a major league hitter. His defense was a question. His maturity was a question, as it should be with any kid that's 19, 20 years old, mm-hmm. now 21.
There's plate discipline, too. Even in April in Las Vegas,
yeah.
I think it was 4 walks and 37 strikeouts.
Yeah, there are certainly things for him to learn. And so having him back there, to take it from a purely economic decision, I know that Jays fans want to call this team a contender. This is a team that it's the makings of a winning team. I know their record is positive now, and that's also good. But you can take a look at this team and say, okay, 2011, no, the Yankees and Red Sox are just too talented. They're spending too much money. 2012, could we be right in that discussion the way the Rays have been the last couple of years? Yeah, there's certainly a chance that you can leapfrog the Rays, who we're starting to see the signs of decline.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to lose a couple more players. They're not going to be able to always fill in the gaps, though their minor league system is loaded. Then you start to squint out at 2013, 2014, 2015. And if you're looking at the cornerstones of your franchise being Batista, Lowry, Romero. That's a nice core right there. And then you fill in around them. You need one more pitcher. You need one more hitter. And then good role players. You pretty much have almost all of that. I think one more hitter, one more starting pitcher.
Right. You've got Morrow.
Yeah.
You've got Drabek on the way, Zach Stewart on the way. For the hitters, you've got Snyder.
Yep.
Yeah, there are. But like you're where you're going, it wasn't going to happen this year.
It wasn't. So then you have to think, if I have this kid for 6 years, which six do I want?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're looking at having him 2012 through 2017, there's going to be a whole lot more Blue Jays wins than if you'd backed it up a year or 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And there, you know, the idea that Lowry was going to be the rookie of the year in the American League, it's a little misguided for a 21-year-old, even as talented as he is.
Yeah.
Most guys fail in their first shot.
It is, and you almost want to see him fail. I talk to scouts, and they're like, I want to see a kid fail. I mean, with Lowry, it's all been off the field and defensively. And last I checked, DH slots still around.
Right.
So that was never that was the failsafe that Milwaukee didn't have, and one of the reasons he was available at all. I think the issue becomes, how do you integrate him? What's he going to do? You want to see, I know it sounds counterintuitive, but you want to see somebody fail because you're going to have to adjust. Look at one of the most talented players in the game right now is Jason Hayward. No one questions this kid is going to be around for a long time. Similar age, thrown into the fire in Atlanta because they were trying to win in Bobby Cox's last year. So they stretched it a little bit, and he was great. No question about it. This year, now we've got all the video on it. Pitchers have seen him. They know how to prepare for him, and he still hasn't adjusted. He's had some injury issues, but there are a lot of guys like that. You look at one-year wonders, and those are the guys that they never adjusted to. And pitchers figured him out. They found the hole in their swing. And if you can't adjust, you're not going to be here long. Then you become Giovanni Soto.
Yeah, poor Giovanni Soto.
But he can still catch at least.
Yeah, I guess. Poor Giovanni Soto. We got time for one more with Will Carroll. Steven is in Toronto. Steven.
Okay, guys. I'll make it quick. But first of all, a couple of callers go talking about Aaron Sebia. We have to remember Aaron Sebia pretty much is a rookie in the major leagues. That's his first full year playing every day. Let's see what the guy can do in year two and three before we start questioning whether the Jays believe him or not.
He played eight games last year.
How old is he? 25?
I think 25.
Yeah.
He's a kid.
Yeah.
He's a kid. But I wanted to say, I'm not going to dump on Rajay Davis had a great series. But why on earth does he continue to swipe second with one out when Adam Lind or somebody's at the plate? You're taking the bat right out of Adam Lind's hand. That's why they gave him the base. He's doing the Mariners a favor. They just, intentionally walked Lind after that.
Yeah, I don't know if he's doing them a favor. At some point, the guys behind Bautista and Lind are going to have to hit. And you get an extra base runner.
Exactly. That's the thing, is I don't have a run expectation matrix in front of me. But I seem to remember that's slightly positive.
Yeah, first and second two outs is better than second two outs.
Well, yeah, exactly. And didn't they have a runner on third for that one?
No.
Okay.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, I was thinking
Davis
it was first
made
and
it
third.
Second and third.
And that's obviously about as good as it gets.
Right.
Then the question is, if he's doing it consistently, obviously I don't see the Jays enough to notice that sort of tendency. That's something that John Farrell might say, hey, cut it out if it was something that was negative.
And that's the reason that Davis was moved out of the top of the lineup earlier in the year, because he was stealing second and they were just when he was getting on with his 240 on base. But then they were walking Jose Bautista, and you didn't want to have that happen because no one was hitting behind him. But when you're backing up Jose Bautista now with Lind and resurgent Encarnacion and Travis Snyder, that's better than backing up Bautista with Juan Rivera and Aaron Hill.
Right.
And I think, intentionally walk him. Go ahead and take our chances.
Exactly. You saw that, right now Bautista is Bonds. I mean, he is very clearly feared by hitters and pitchers and managers alike, and you got to take that. It's one of those things, and that's why you have nine guys in the lineup.
That's right.
Somebody has to come through. I think, Davis is a nice player. He's another guy that came through Indianapolis. If he is your fourth outfielder, you're a good team. And I think in that role, he's certainly productive.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't like his on-base percentage, but you sure like his wheels.
Right. He's an exceptional weapon, especially off the bench, where you don't have to worry about him getting himself on base.
Yeah.
You can just throw him out there when somebody else gets on.
Exactly. I mean, if you're playing a game with Travis Snyder as your center fielder and you're up late, you can sneak in Rajai. Hey, win. Everything looks good. That's the perfect kind of situation for a team, because that means, A, you're good. You're not struggling to find guys. You're not forced to put somebody like him out there and expose the things he can't do. With him, there are certain things he can do. We know who he is. And so it gives you the advantage of taking a guy like Snyder, who's not a defensive liability.
No, not at all.
But he's certainly not going to contend for very many gold gloves either. But his bat carries the position. So the more bats you can put in your lineup, and not hurt yourself too much defensively, great.
I am with you 100% on this. Will, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thanks
for having
me, Mike.
Glad to have you up here in Toronto.
Love the trip, and,
say more good things about our city.
I love this city, other than the heat. If you could have turned that down a little bit, I thought I was coming to Canada to get a little break from the heat.
No, sir. No, it doesn't work that way.
It's always good to see history.
Yes. Yeah, and now you get to see a stadium being turned into a football stadium. The Blue Jays beat the Seattle Mariners 7-5. They blew the 5-1 lead in the eighth, but came back with a 2-out, 2-run double by Rajay Davis in the bottom to win it, and John Roush closed it out, picks up the win. When we come back, the scoreboard, it is the Honda Post Game Show on the Blue Jays Radio Network. And we are back here at Rogers Center in the wake of a 7-5 win for the Blue Jays. They sweep away the Mariners. Yeah, it wasn't especially fun down the stretch, but they get the sweep. They've won 8 of 10. They're back up over 500, and they head out to Texas now for a three-game road trip. And then they'll be back home for a week to take on the Orioles and the Rangers. The St. Louis Cardinals beat the New York Mets 6-2 today in 90-degree heat in 2 hours and 7 minutes. The Marlins falling 4-0 right now to the Padres. That game is in the top of the fifth. They had a 2.5-hour rain delay that both starting pitchers came back from. Colorado over Atlanta 4-2 in the top of the third. Texas and the Angels 0-0. That game is in the top of the second. We will be back here tomorrow night. And we've got an extra pre-game show for those of you listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590, or on fan590.com. And in tomorrow's pre-game, we're going to hear from a couple of former Blue Jays, one of whom was an original Blue Jay, Ron Fairley, and the Jays' first ever All-Star, and one of whom was a Blue Jay for about 15 minutes in 1979, and that was Chris Chambliss, who is the hitting coach right now for the Seattle Mariners. So we'll have them on the pre-game show as the Jays are in Texas. JoJo Reyes against Colby Lewis. The rest of the country will join us at 7:30 Eastern time for an 8:05 first pitch. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Rogers, a proud partner of the Toronto Blue Jays. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. Hall of Fame weekend is coming up. Roberto Alomar is going to get into Cooperstown. We will be all over that all weekend long as the Jays visit the Rangers. And again, we are on 7 o'clock Eastern on our flagship station, Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590, 7:30 across the rest of the country. For Jerry Howard, Alan Ashby, Tom Young, Dylan Brown, Lance Kennedy, Joel McFadden, special guest Will Carroll, I'm Mike Wilner. Good afternoon from Rogers Center.